How long ago did you get here?
About, say,
3 days ago.
40 minutes.
You've been here for 45 minutes already? Yeah, you're still waiting for your pizza?
Pretty much, yeah.
Absolutely.
Is it worth the wait? We're asking ourselves that question.
You ever waited in a crazy long line for some famous pizza or barbecue? Was it worth it?
It's just part of the experience in whole. If you want the best pizza, you have to wait as long as you need to.
Today on The Sporkful, I'll make my first trip to a legendary Brooklyn pizzeria that's famous for their slices and their line.
I'm getting aggravated. It's hot. I could keel over right now.
Plus, we'll talk with experts about the psychology of lines and their effect on our appetites. When does a long wait make our food taste better? When does it make it taste worse? What types of lines produce happier customers? And maybe most important,
why would you stand in line an hour for a slice of pizza?
That's all coming up. Stick around. From WNYC Studios, this is The Sporkful. It's not for foodies, it's for eaters. I'm Dan Pashman. Each week on our show, we obsess about food to learn more about people. Look up any list of the best slices of pizza in New York, and DeFara Pizza is going to be there. It's been in the same spot, deep in Brooklyn, for 57 years, and it's always been run by the same guy, Dom DeMarco. DeFara is famous for its history, its pizza, and one other thing, the line. Everyone knows that when you go to DeFara, you are going to have to wait a long time for your food. That's why I never went. I didn't want to deal with that line. Then one day, I was tweeting with Ed Levine. He's the founder of Serious Eats, and he wrote a whole book about pizza. And I said, Ed, look, I've been putting off going to DeFara. Should I go? Is it worth it? And he said, yes, DeFara is special. So I decided to give it a shot. Of course, if I was going to go wait that long for my pizza, I was going to make Ed keep me company. You can get really good pizza in a lot of places in America, certainly in New York, without having to wait in a long line. Why is DeFara's worth it?
Part of it is it's a destination restaurant. People are willing to wait in line. It's like barbecue joints in Texas. It's self-validating, right? It's like, I just drove 500 miles. There's a line. I must be in the right place. This is a long-standing tradition of a line. It's not, in other words, it's like clubs. You know, sometimes when a new hot club opens, the velvet rope line is really long of all the wannabes that want to get in, and then they move on, right? So it's fashion. And what's interesting about a line like DeFara's, it hasn't changed. You know, there's still a line.
Well, right, so it's interesting. Some of these line places, it's a status symbol.
Yes.
So, like, what is the difference then with a place like DeFara's? Is it the history? Is it, what is it?
It is still status, for sure. It is history, and part of that history is that Dom DeMarco is still making pizza. You know, he cuts the basil. You know, he cuts the oregano. He uses two or three kinds of cheese. There are qualitative differences. Whether it's worth the wait, it is a unique slice.
The day we were there, it was super hot, in the 90s, really humid. Dom DeMarco's daughter, Maggie, she takes the orders. She announced they weren't opening the inside of the restaurant. They needed to conserve their meager AC. So all orders went through the window on the street, and everyone had to wait outside. We talked to some people in line. Here's Lisa.
It's a very Brooklyn thing, and that's why I'm here. I'm here for experience.
And I guess part of waiting outside is part of the experience.
Yes, I would say that after a certain amount of time, it turns into aggravation. And that is a thin line.
So let's say one is pure bliss, wonderful experience, and 10 is total aggravation, experience ruined. And 5 is the tipping point.
Uh-huh.
Where are we right now?
Well, right now I'm with my friends here. It's my birthday, and I'm not at work. So I say we're doing good. It's a little hot for me, but then I'm from California, so I'm a wimp when it comes to weather. But other than that, it's good.
Ed and I actually got to the front of the line in like 5 or 10 minutes. It was kind of not so bad. But one thing we would learn is that a big part of the wait at DeFara comes after you order.
Could I please have 2 regular slices? And should I get 1 plain square slice, Ed?
Sure. Yeah, get a plain.
Plain square?
Yeah.
Okay, so 1 plain square, please.
Okay.
Now, it was time to wait.
How's it going?
Good, how are you, man?
Good, what's your name?
Alden.
Alden, you're standing here with a frustrated look on your face.
I'm not that frustrated. I'm just hungry, man.
How long have you been waiting for this pizza?
I don't know. We were in line for like 20 minutes, and then I think it's been like 10, maybe 5, I don't know.
Where are you in from?
Dallas.
So you've never been here before?
I've never been here before.
What are your expectations at right now?
I mean, if it's this long, it has to be good.
We'll get back to DeFara in a bit, but what that last guy, Alden, said was kind of true for me too. Expectations were building in that line. So is that a good thing for the eating experience? I reached out to Dick Larson. He's a professor at MIT who studies the mechanics and the psychology of lines. He goes by the nickname Dr. Q, as in Q-U-E-U-E.
The longer the wait, the higher your expectation is of the quality of service you're about to get. The simple example is in supermarkets. A housewife or house husband with $200 worth of groceries for their family for the week, that's a big service, checking that out. And so they expect to wait longer than somebody who goes through self-checkout or express lanes. So the same, I think, is true in restaurants. If you're going to wait, be willing to wait an hour for your piece of pizza, that piece of pizza better darn well be very, very good.
So big expectations can be a problem because Dr. Q says the key to happy customers in any service business is to surpass expectations.
The people at Disney World, I believe, are the Machiavellian experts of the psychology of queuing. So you might see a sign on a Disney queue saying, well, if you join the queue here, you can anticipate 1 hour of delay. But that sign is usually put at a place where it might only be 45 minutes of delay. So the sign deliberately overestimates that duration. So when they get on the 4-minute ride, husband says to wife, look, dear, we're 15 minutes ahead of schedule.
But managing expectations isn't always so simple for a restaurant. Doug Soane spent 13 years running a famous hot dog and sausage joint in Chicago called Hot Doug's. It was known for items like duck sausage with foie gras on top or duck fat fries, you know, light fare. Also, Hot Doug's was known for its crazy long lines. 2 years ago, Doug was burnt out. He announced he was going to close up shop, but he gave 6 months advance notice. And in those final months, the lines got longer and longer and longer. At the end, people were waiting 2, 3, 4 hours for their food.
Yeah, was it cool that there was a line out the door and people down the block and it looked great? It was wonderful for the publicity. But it made for, in some ways, it's tough. It's tough because you're already in a mindset where you're now trying to weigh, well, is this worth it or not? Which is sort of an absurd question. Anyways, when people ask me, is it worth waiting in line for? And I'm like, if you think it is.
But you did have a certain sense of like, I guess it's impossible expectations. People walk in the door with impossible expectations when they've been waiting for your food for 2 hours.
That's part of it. Yeah. And part of it was, you know, I mean, I felt a tiny bit of pressure, but at the same token, you know, I forced myself not to, in the sense, well, that was your choice. But that each, you know, 10 minutes over an hour and a half, people are just get, rightfully so. I mean, I'm not saying this is a negative thing, a little crankier, certainly hungrier. And, you know, you're expecting, you know, get in line at 12. If you're having lunch at 12:20, 12:30, fine. If you're having lunch at 2:15, 2:30, not that great.
For Doug, towards the end, all the hype around the restaurant and the line had another downside.
If I heard the phrase bucket list one more time towards the end there, I was going to just beat someone severely with a baseball bat. So it's like, oh, gosh.
Why? Because it sounds corny or because?
It's just because part of me felt that's not what I set out to create. The goal was to create this place where you went and sat and had lunch and had a meal
where you didn't photograph everything, where you didn't Instagram everything, where you didn't overanalyze everything. And then it just kind of became, okay, well, now you're doing this to say you went here.
But Dr. Q says a lot of people love the exact kind of line that Doug's talking about, the kind of line they have at DeFaris. He calls them celebratory cues. And he says they're really different from waiting at the post office.
It's not unlike the iPhone 8 coming out. There's bragging rights. People take selfies. You know, you can tell your friends and neighbors you were the first one to get this iPhone. So it sounds like this DeFaris is a little bit like the celebratory cue. Maybe some selfies go on Facebook and say, hey, I was there. I paid $5. It was pizza was great.
But even though it gets us bragging rights, we still don't love long lines. Dr. Q says there are some simple ways restaurants could make our experience better. First, keep the line moving. Research shows we're happier after spending an hour in a line that's moving quickly than an hour in a line moving slowly, even though we spend an hour either way. Second, just have a single line, even if it's long. You know that setup with the multiple registers and the multiple lines, and you gotta like strategize and figure out which is the best line to be in? That stresses us out.
The guarantee of first come, first serve seems to make people much happier and less threatened by social unfairness.
So people really care about the line being fair.
Correct. They care about that more than they care about the duration of the wait.
Also, while we're waiting, distract us. Disney has that one down.
Basically, the amusement starts when you're in the queue channel, because you see photographs of things going on, cartoons, images, things that kids can play with.
It's a similar principle when you go to a restaurant and they give you the buzzer or they take your cell phone number and call you when your table's ready. You can go off and get distracted. There's a barbecue place in Austin called Franklin. It's known for its long lines. But at Franklin, while you're waiting, you can drink. And that's its own special kind of distraction. Maybe Disney should try that. I gotta say, give me a case of beer. I'll wait all day to meet Anna and Elsa. Anyway, there is one more way to improve your experience in line. Wait with the right people. Dr. Q, do you think of yourself as a fun person to wait in line with?
No. Without hesitation, right. No. No. Dr. Q has his own little ways of trying to avoid queues.
Okay. Tell me about some of them, yeah.
Okay. So for lunch, there's a place, a national chain, which has excellent food. And what I get every day is the minimum queuing food, namely soups. They have six excellent, or sometimes eight, excellent soups they create every day. Those are self-serve and check out with Apple Pay, so there's no cash, and I'm in and out fast. This place also has excellent sandwiches, but the sandwich queue is 15 to 20 humans deep. I have never ordered a sandwich there.
Do you think that restaurant's bottom line would be better off if they managed their queue more efficiently and thus persuaded you to order an occasional sandwich, and then maybe you'd eat the sandwich and see how amazing they were and tell all your friends about it, and then they'd want to come?
Yeah.
Coming up, we'll take you back to DeFaris to see how everyone there is holding up. And I'll talk to a doctor about how long waits affect your appetite. Then, spoiler alert, we will actually eat. But will it be worth the effort? Stick around. Welcome back to The Sporkful from WNYC Studios. I'm Dan Pashman. If you're listening to this show in the NPR One app, please make sure you follow The Sporkful in NPR One. Just find our show and click on follow. That way you'll never miss an episode of our show, and it also helps other people to discover The Sporkful. So please just hit that follow button right now while you're listening. If you're using iTunes or the podcast app, you just hit subscribe. Thanks. Now let's get back to the scene outside DeFaris Pizza. I was with Ed Levine, founder of Serious Eats and renowned pizza expert, and while we were waiting, we talked about how a long wait at a place like this can affect your order. The other thing I'm wondering, do you think that when the longer people wait, the bigger their orders are?
You know, I've often thought about that because, especially in a slice place, I always used to, because maybe I was just trying to kid myself that one slice would do the trick. So I'd say, oh, but I could always order another.
Right, but here you don't have that option.
You don't have that option.
In fact, as we sit here, I'm thinking to myself, like, I feel like I should have gotten a second regular slice.
Yes.
Right, I'm going to go change our order. All right, it's Maggie. That's her name, yeah. Right? Okay, all right, I'll go talk to Maggie. Adding another slice to our order did give me a temporary boost of adrenaline, but that faded pretty fast. At this point, it's like 1 o'clock in the afternoon. It's in the mid-90s. It's humid. The sun is beating down on us mercilessly, and we are starving. This does not feel like a celebratory cue. I checked in with Lisa. She's the woman you heard earlier from California. Lisa, I see you pacing back and forth nervously in front of the window. Where are we on a scale from 1 to 10 now?
I'm a little hot. Was 10 the worst?
Yeah, 10 means it's a disaster and this pizza can't possibly be worth it. 1 is pure bliss.
Well, you have to understand that nothing is sheer bliss because my background as a neurotic Jewish woman, so nothing. Who left New York?
So you like woke up at a 3,
right?
Basically, okay.
Exactly. And I have a mother who's a 9.
Okay.
So yeah, I'm uncomfortable, and it doesn't help that I can't sit down and eat my pizza.
Right.
I'm at about a 6 or 7.
Okay, so we're past the tipping point where you are starting to.
I'm getting aggravated. Okay. I'm getting aggravated. It's hot. It's hot.
All right.
I could keel over right now.
3 slices for Ali.
Dylan, how long have you been waiting for your pizza?
About 45 minutes.
Where are you from?
Australia.
Are you here visiting?
Yep.
Where are you staying?
Harlem,
Manhattan. That's far from here.
Yeah.
So how long did it take you just to get here? About an hour, right?
Yeah, about an hour. Yeah.
Took you an hour to get here. You've been waiting 45 minutes for your pizza.
Yep.
It's like 90-something degrees out today.
Yeah.
It's not a pleasant day to be waiting outside.
No, it's not.
How has your state of mind evolved over these 45 minutes?
Pretty much the same, just want the pizza.
But I mean, like, are you getting a little bit antsy? A
little bit, yeah.
A little frustrated?
Yeah.
Starting to wonder if this was a good idea?
Yeah. Definitely.
As we stood out there on the sidewalk, what really struck me was just how slowly the pizza was coming out. I mean, many minutes would go by without a single person getting a single slice. I asked Maggie, Dom DeMarco's daughter, why?
Well, now I would say age, but before then, just the process. He's an artist. What he does is more of an art.
Maggie's dad, Dom, is 79 now. She says for the first 40-something years the place was open, he made every single slice himself. Now he takes a little help, so he makes maybe 90% of the pizza. And I gotta say, seeing him hunched over that counter, cutting the basil by hand for every slice, I found it kind of moving. Like, over all these years, how many people from all over the world have come to this place to eat this pizza made by this man? And now, I was going to get to be a part of that. I was able to pull him away from his work for just a minute.
My name is Dominic. What's my job title? Make a pizza.
It seems like part of the experience of coming here is that people wait a long time for their food.
Yeah, they do, yeah.
Do you feel like you like it to be the way it is, or would you like to try to find a way to make it go faster?
No, I like it like this, yeah.
Why? What do you like about it?
It's because it's perfect that way, you know. I make a lot of pies. Customer, they wait a longer time. Sometimes when you come over here, you're going to take a day off.
Fortunately for me, I didn't have to take a day off because this is my job. Same for Ed, my spirit guide on this quest. But now we've been waiting for about 45 minutes. Ed was slumped on the only bench around, and for both of us, this was a tough day at the office. So
we're clearly not getting special treatment. Yeah. You're very democratic.
It's true, yeah. I thought you were going to pull some strings for us here, Ed.
I know. There's obviously no strings to pull.
Right. I'm starting to feel like I'm past my hunger peak. The heat and the weight and the, you know, the humidity. I don't know. I got to say, I mean, maybe when I get that first bite, I'll be right back in the zone.
I think so. I think your blood sugar is, you know, plummeting and you're feeling it.
Yeah, we were feeling it. But what exactly were we feeling?
What goes on in your body when you're waiting so long for your food? Is there such thing as a hunger peak? We reached out to Dr. Mark Friedman. He spent years studying appetite and eating at the Monell Chemical Senses Center. He confirmed that heat and dehydration can make you feel less hungry. But if you haven't eaten in a long time on a physiological level, you're still hungry, even if you don't feel it. Dr. Friedman explained what was happening to Ed and me as we waited outside the Fara.
Thinking about food or smelling it or seeing it can elicit a bunch of physiological reflexes, which are called cephalic phase reflexes, cephalic referring to the head, because you're either thinking about it, seeing it, or smelling it, hearing it if somebody's eating crunchy food next to you. And these reflexes prepare the body for the incoming wave of food that you're about to eat. So you have hormones that start getting secreted, you have gastric juices starting to flow, and so on. And thinking about food can do that.
And what happens if those responses continue to be triggered for a longer period of time, and yet you don't get the food?
So while you're standing in line waiting in the, you know, to eat in the restaurant, you may feel hungry at times, you may stop feeling hungry, just like if you're busy at lunch and you don't eat, you may have been hungry, but now you're not even thinking about it. So your attention essentially is drawn away from that hunger, from those sensations to something else. So you're not feeling hungry, but you're still hungry physiologically.
And when that happens, when you kind of feel like you've gone so long without eating that you lose your appetite, what is actually happening physiologically?
When you're fasting, your body is supplying itself with energy from your stored fuels, stored food, if you will. So it could be that these feelings of hunger that wax and wane or go away is because your body is, for example, it goes away because you haven't eaten and your body says, okay, I need some more, and it mobilizes more of this energy for immediate use. And then that maybe alleviates your hunger a little bit. I mean, this is pure speculation, but you can, you know, but it's conceivable, but we don't know. To me, what I am continually surprised about is something as basic as hunger, is how little we actually know about it.
So, Mark, when you're waiting to eat, what's your strategy for managing your hunger?
Well, I'd say my strategy is more to manage my irritability. I tend, like a lot of people, I think, I get irritable when I'm hungry. In fact, my students, when I was teaching, my graduate students knew not to come talk to me around lunchtime. And my family certainly knows that.
So the idea of getting hangry, that's real. And back at DeFara, our friend Lisa from California, seemed like she reached her boiling point.
Lisa?
They just called Lisa's name. I don't see Lisa. Did Lisa give up? We seem to have lost Lisa. I think she went to go find air conditioning.
I know. I think so, too. I think it had reached a 10.
The two younger guys who had been with Lisa, they were still there. They grabbed the pizza, and they took off down the street. They wouldn't tell me where they were going or where Lisa was, but I gathered she must have gone to some undisclosed air-conditioned location to await the food. Meanwhile, Dylan, the guy from Australia, he and his girlfriend Viv finally got their pizza.
Tastes nice. And the crust is good. And it's all over my hands.
It's how you eat pizza. It's on your nose.
So you waited 45 minutes?
Yeah.
Was it worth it?
Yeah.
I mean, we won't be here if again, probably in our lives.
Yeah, so I don't know if it's worth it.
Sure.
Is it worth it because the pizza tastes so good or because you can now say you've been here?
Yeah, so
probably
I've been
the
here.
Latter, yeah. We've been there, we've done that.
Exactly.
So if it wasn't famous, would you feel like it wasn't worth it? Because you wouldn't have that, then you have no bragging rights.
Yeah, exactly.
Probably.
Yeah.
I mean, it was really good, but yeah. It could have been good in 5 minutes as well.
Then there was Alden from Dallas. He and his mom finally got their pizza too. Was it worth it?
For sure.
It's pretty good.
It was a really
it's
good pizza.
Good.
I should have got a whole thing.
It lives up to the hype.
Oh, yeah. For sure. This
lives
is excellent.
Up to the hype. But I would caution close relatives to be prepared for a long wait.
Yeah. It takes forever.
Right. How much of your satisfaction with this pizza is the actual taste of the pizza and the fact that now you can tell all your friends you've been here?
Most of my friends don't know about this place, so I think it's just the taste mostly.
I mean, it really is good. I didn't know it would be such an adventure, though.
Then,
After nearly an hour, we heard the call from the window.
Ed? Ed?
Our pizza was ready. Let's dig in.
Yeah.
Typically at this point, you'd hear Ed and me bite into our pizza and say, it's so good. But funny thing happened there at Tafara, which is that I forgot to point the microphones at our faces to record our reactions. I was blinded by hunger. I scarfed that first slice down so fast, I have no memory of it. And I guess that says something about what happens when you wait too long to eat. Thank God I ordered that extra slice. And once I got into those second, third slices, I was able to appreciate it a little more. So first, the thin crust slice. Now, typically, pizza is very mozzarella-centric. The cheese is very rich and creamy. But Ed explained to me that Dom DeMarco uses a cheese called Grana Padano, a much sharper cheese, sort of like a Parmigiano Reggiano.
This is actually, it's more like a composed Italian-American dish rather than a slice of pizza.
Then there was the thick crust Sicilian square slice. Dom cooks it with a ton of oil, so when he takes it out of the oven, you can hear it sizzling, and that oil is basically frying the bottom crust. And when you bite into it, you can hear the crunch. Yeah, I remember to record that. In the moment, that Sicilian was the best slice of Sicilian I ever had, and it was the clear winner at DeFara's, I thought. But it's interesting, hours later, I found myself craving the sharpness and the balance of flavors from the thin crust slice. As Ed and I finished eating, there was one more question left to answer. Was it worth the wait?
I thought I was going to say no. And even though we did wait over an hour, it really was an experience. And I was reminded, I haven't been here in a long time, that it really is an experience. It's not simply eating a slice of pizza. You know, so the line is part of it. And the craft that goes into every slice is still part of it.
I think the pizza is outstanding. The combination of the location being out of the way, at least for where I live and where you live, and the long wait. I'm very glad I came. I think this experience was worth the wait. But I don't know that I would do it again.
No, yeah, you might do it once a year, or you might want to show a friend it.
Right.
But you're right. Like next Friday, if I was like in the mood for a slice, there's no way I'd come here.
Well, Ed, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Dan. It was great, man. The pizza was awesome. Thanks for reminding me why this place is so special.
Coming up on our next show, Radiolab host Jad Abumrad and I will investigate edible marijuana. And yes, part of our investigation, we will eat.
I'm feeling very relaxed.
However, things will not go as planned.
Pashman, I hold you responsible for this.
Stay tuned for that. Thanks to Ed Levine, founder of Serious Eats. If you like food podcasts, which I'm guessing you probably do, check out the Serious Eats podcast, which Ed hosts. It's called Special Sauce. Ed has long-form conversations with people from chefs like Tom Colicchio and Dominique Ansel to guys like David Simon, the creator of The Wire. Check out Special Sauce wherever you got this podcast. And while you're doing that, make sure you check out this week's episode of the Freakonomics podcast, which is a companion piece to this Sporkful that you just heard. I pitch in and help out as host Stephen Dubner investigates the economics of lines. Plus, he'll tell you about a study that showed how longer lines can make smoothies taste better. That's up now. Check it out. This show is a production of WNYC Studios and The Sporkful. It's produced by Ann Sani, Caitlin Pierce, and me. Editing help from Shoshana Gold. Music help from Black Label Music. Special thanks to Paula Schumann and Irva Gunja. Until next time, I'm Dan Pashman.
And I'm Shanine Shelby from Columbus, Ohio.
And I'm Jason Carver from Albany, Georgia.
And I'm Kate from Brooklyn, New York, reminding you to eat more,
eat better,
and eat more better.